as we were talking about the repeating it on the
the signals and but it was a good way of communicating. It was a very personal way of communicating with the rural area, and I think that more people in those days knew when one of their friends or acquaintances died or something was than do now. You know.
Yeah, that's right. Because it could all over with in 3 days, and you never knew what happened.
Because I know from my own personal experience, since I haven't been working, I'm not in contact with the public very much, and
you don't know what's going on.
I didn't know Mrs. K had passed away or anything like that, you know, because I just don't hear it.
Right. But, and not everybody sits and reads the obituaries in the paper
I don't get the daily.
And sometimes that's passed till that's in the paper. The services are over with already.
And you were on such a personal basis with your with all the people. You know, you knew where they were at and
knew what business they were in and what kind of information they needed and who did they.
Yeah, right. You could.
Well, was there ever anything that you didn't like about that job as a telephone operator? Just the rushing, the people chewing you out when you couldn't connect them?
That was one thing. The lowest salary was so bad, you know, not hard, not enough.
Nothing like today. People work on the telephone company, make money everywhere.
They make a fantastic salary. Well, then after I stopped working while I went to work for the post office, and I took a chance there. It was advertised in the paper. The La Crosse Ledger was the local newspaper at the time. And the Civil Service Commission advertised the test for the post office here, and it was paying $1.06 an hour.
And that would have been better by far than what you were making.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
And you never got raises or anything, I guess.
No, we had to just, we finally got a $5 raise right before I quit, and that's just because I harassed Mr. Seacat so much he couldn't stand to listen to me anymore.
So the telephone company, when did it become Bell Telephone?
In the 50s. I don't remember.
That was
the
after
year.
You had
Yeah,
finished.
Right. Because after I quit, why, Bell Telephone bought it. They bought all the shareholders out, and for some time after they bought it, they still maintained a switchboard with operators, but they had more sophisticated equipment. And Mabel Cease and Winnie Booble and J.E. Miller, those were three of the operators. I know there were more. I just remember those three.
You were saying you answered this ad then? We might get onto that subject while we're here, and we've got another 30 minutes, unless you have to get back.
No, I don't have to. All I have to do today, I have give Kirk a music lesson at 2:00, and then at 3:00, we're going to the rest home and play music for the old folks.
That's great.
Anyway, that's Kirk and I are going.
Fun, and I bet you they just love it.
Yeah, they do.
I bet they do. Well, you are.
Okay.
We'll just get on the subject of post office for a little bit, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
Okay.
So they advertised in the paper, and I said, I'm going to take that test. You know, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Yeah.
And I had taken a civil service test in San Antonio, and I thought I would get called, but I never did. So I took this test, and there were, four people passed, and I wasn't the highest grade, although I did have a good grade. I was only up in the 80s, but there were two other, Maxine Shearhart was one of them. She's Vernon Shearhart's oldest daughter. Her grade was a little bit higher. And then Vic Fletcher, but he was a veteran, you know, that gave him 5 points.
Oh, I see.
But Mr. Nado Naglin just happened to... He happened to like me.
Oh, he was the hire.
He was the postmaster. He could make the decision out of the top three.
I see.
Okay, he knew Maxine was she was going to get married because she was going with this Friesenheim boy then already, and he just she wasn't going to be here but a few months, you know. And Vic Fletcher decided he didn't want it because it wasn't enough hours to make a living, you know. If that when I started, you worked 4 hours, and that was from 8 to 12 in the morning, and I made $1.06 an hour. Anyway, we took the test in February or March, and then in October the 1st is when I started the job. And I worked there.
And where was the post office at?
It was in the, where the bulletin office is now, the newspaper.
Oh. That's... And did we ever say where the telephone office was?
Oh, no, we sure didn't.
Well, let's just buy...
Okay, it's where the telephone office building is now.
That same, it's a different building.
Oh, yes.
It's the same location.
In fact, the old telephone building is still here in town. It's, where Mariano Aguinaga lives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see, across the street from him, I think Chano Lascano owns, Aciano Lascano is his name.
Uh-huh.
He married one of the Ragosa girls, too, and he owns the house directly across the street from Mariano, and right behind his house, if you ever drive that street, there's a little narrow lumber building that's very tall. They made
it
into
like a little window at the top.
That's
like
the
that.
Old telephone building.
Oh, and what was upstairs on that? Was that
there was
nothing,
nothing
up
was
there? Oh, they just put that up there.
Just such a high ceiling, you know.
And that little old bitty thing.
And that was it. And it was it has two rooms. The front room. The little front room was where you had your switchboard,
uh-huh.
And then you had a wire cage that kept you separated from the public, you know.
Oh, I see.
So that nobody could take your money, because you always had money. You always took toll and took bills and things. And then on the other side of the wire cage, wall or whatever, was the there was a telephone booth where they would make long-distance calls, you know.
Oh, I see.
And then in the other room, well, there was a bed and a lavatory and a little bathroom and for the night operator, you know, sleep and then.
Well, in lunch hours, you just sat and ate there. You never took an hour break or something like that.
When you worked that Sunday from 7 to 7, they took your lunch with you or someone brought you lunch.
Well, and that's a cute little building. I ought to put that somewhere where everybody didn't say on there what it was. I guess somebody lives in that right now.
I think they converted it into a two-story house. I'm pretty sure they're using. I think they lowered the ceiling and put a bedroom up there.
Up on top there. I believe it is a two-story thing. I thought maybe that's where the operator would sleep on Sunday or at night duty.
No.
She had to be right there by the switchboard in case it ran.
Right, and then see, they have bedrooms.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's right. You see it off to the...
Yeah, off to the back. But that is the old telephone building. Mm-hmm. I don't think many people know that.
I don't think so either.
So anyway, then I went to work at the post office, and I started October the 1st in 1950. And I've worked for three postmasters. My first postmaster was Mr. Otto Naglin, and he retired in April of 1953. And then Mr. Bob Green was acting postmaster from 1953 to 1955, and I guess probably April of 1955, as well as I recall, something like that. That's pretty close. Well, the Civil Service Commission called for a test, you know, for our postmasters, so there were eight of us that took it. And six of us passed, and I made the highest grade on highest written score. I think I made 94.8 on the written test. But then wasn't the total thing, total grade
qualification.
Okay. Then they checked you on management experience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to get some personal recommendations from
people
at random in town. Anyway, there was less than one percentage point between Floyd Tundry, John Dukos, and myself.
My God.
When they put the final grade.
Grades on.
But see, John and Floyd both had veterans'
points.
But mine was just...
I see.
my knowledge. And
which made this 1% still, even with that attitude there, huh?
Well, see, they had five, it brought my 94.8 down to 90-something because they didn't give me as high a rating on management knowledge as they did the two men. But then the men had like 85, say, and each one had five points veteran added. We were all right over 91 with a percentage, but we were all 91 point something. And, of course, politics entered into it a great deal. It was a presidential appointment after the testing and all. Then the president, well, of course, he went on the Republican county chairman's recommendation is what he did.
That's
the way they actually are selected. So whoever had enough pull or whoever played his cards right or, let's say, went, I don't know just how to express it nicely.
It's hard.
Anyway, okay, I'll put it this way. John Dukas and I didn't play politics. I just talked to him about it not too long ago. We both decided that if we were qualified and they wanted us, they'd get it.
Right.
Well, anyway, Floyd Tundra got it in 1955. So I had worked 5 years before he became postmaster. And I worked my whole career there
as a clerk until
1978. I went to Brackettville as an officer in charge for 5 months, and then I went to La Crosse as an officer in charge for 3 months. That's the new title for an acting postmaster or postmaster replacement. While they're selecting one, or the postmaster is out of his office for some reason, that's what the title is. And then I transferred to New Braunfels, and I was there 2 months when I hurt my back and
retired.
I'm not officially retired yet, but I hope to.
Well, what was it? That was kind of like the telephone business with the post office business, because you usually know when somebody moves into town, when somebody leaves town, you kind of know what's going on there, too.
Yes, you know all
and everybody coming to get their mail. Why?
Really? In my opinion, which probably doesn't mean much, but anyway, I'll express it. I think that Castorville is large enough for city delivery. I really do. And it would not be house to house like they have in San Antonio. What they do is they put what they call a cluster, and it's like a lockbox. You have a key to it, and they put a cluster like on the corner of a block, and everybody in that whole block or two blocks
can go get their mail there.
Go right that corner and get their mail instead of coming to the post office. Because even when I left here last year, there was 600 and some boxes, mailboxes rented at that time, and I imagine there's been another 100.
Well, I know they added on a few on that back wall. Were those there when you?
Yes, they were there before I left, but you were renting them every day, you know, and I imagine they probably have an additional 100 by now. And a town that size could really use one mail carrier could do it, you know.
It wouldn't take that much.
You wouldn't need that but one to do it, but.
That would be.
I tell you, it.
Well, yeah, what is holding back from something like that? Does it have to be so many before they can do this, or is there a law, or?
Well, a lot of it has to do with what, you know, if the people really
want it,
and also your postmaster has to want it.
I see. Well, I guess if enough people wanted it and told him that they wanted it, that might would help.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Well, you know how far away we are. That was really something to have to drive all the way over here to get mail.
I was surprised you got your box, your mailbox. I really was. I didn't think that it would be it's because it's across the street. It's not in the city limits. Is that right?
That's right. So see, where I am is the city limits, and on the other side is not city limits.
That's why you...
Yeah. Well, my dad stayed there when I had one of the babies, and it frustrated him that he had to drive all the way over here to Castroville to get the mail, you know, each time. And so he went and bought the mailbox for us and said, "This is," he said, "you'll get killed by one of these gravel trucks going to get your mail." And I said, "Well, the same thing. You walk out there, you can get run over by one." But it does seem a little inconvenient to me, anyway, to have to get in a car to get your mail.
Yes. What I, you know, I'm really sorry. Or it makes, I really hate it that I had to end up with a bad back and couldn't finish out my last year and a half over at New Braunfels, because I thoroughly enjoyed that job.
Oh, really?
I worked like a dog, but I really
enjoyed it.
Enjoyed it. Because, and I'm so glad that even though it was only 2 months or 3 months, whatever, at least I worked in a first-class post office. You would be amazed at the difference in that type of office compared to one like this. They have 15 city carriers. They have 7 rural route carriers. There's 40 people on the floor at one time.
Oh, my.
And the personalities, you know, the different personalities. And I got along just beautifully with all of them. There was only one.
And you were head over that whole thing?
No. I was just a clerk.
At New Braunfels?
I had transferred as a clerk.
Oh, I see.
Then I had gotten, but then I had gotten, they were going to interview me for the Atkins, Texas post office as a postmaster. I was chosen as one of the candidates for that post office, and I withdrew. Because I was afraid I couldn't.
That was further away, too, wasn't it?
Well, it's a little bit closer than New Braunfels.
Oh, it is?
But I just couldn't see taking responsibility the chance like and that. The responsibility with back. My back the way it is.
Yeah.
I don't know, like I told you earlier, I may still have to do something drastic about it, you know, but then I'm hoping not. But anyway, that New Braunfels post office was a fascinating place to work in. And I even had my driver's license, and I was driving the Jeeps, you know, which it was hard work going out and collecting that mail. And, of course, it was at the worst time of the year. It was raining and cold and just miserable. I know one evening it was 36 degrees, and I got soaking wet getting the
mail,
collecting that mail. But I enjoyed driving those Jeeps. I'd never
driven. Well, it was getting out instead of being in the same little spot each time.
A right-hand drive ever, you know. And I know one morning we had taken some Jeeps to have them serviced over to, they had one garage there in the Raffles that did all the servicing. And here, the superintendent of mails loaded 4 of us in his car. And see, we all had a license. Took 4 of us down to the garage, and here we went. It was cute. All in a row, these post office. I'm the only lady driving one.
Just buzzing along, huh? I didn't realize New Braunfels was that big.
It's over 20,000 people.
Oh, I didn't realize how big that was. Well, does Hondo have, they have mailboxes.
They have city carriers, but I think they've only got about 3 carriers.
Oh.
3 or 4.
Uh-huh.
4 maybe. But those carriers work. Now, I want to tell you, that's hard work.
That's hard work.
That New Braunfels Zeitung, that means newspaper.
Oh.
German. News comes out on a Thursday morning.
And you got 20,000 of them.
Let me tell you, you wouldn't believe it. The whole loading dock is newspapers. And they do bundle them according to city carriers, you know, like City 10, City 9, City 8, and so forth. They're bundled. But they've got to be moved. So you've got to, and you've
and
got to
lift them up
all
and
of
carry
those
them.
And newspaper and put them by the carrier's case so he can work them, see. And he's got his case has all of his little slots for his letters, and then he's got a bigger slot for his magazines. That's all got to be staffed in rotation according to his route, how he runs his route, and they have big plastic boxes in the, and these newspapers are all stacked in a row, you know, flat tray after tray of them, sometimes 4 or 5 trays, and then they put their packages in a little, in a hamper, and throw them in the Jeep. That one route is so heavy that sometimes he can't load all his packages in his Jeep. He can't see out.
See out. Oh, my gosh.
And they were. I'm telling you, they were.
Well, now, are they separate? Are those like we have those who go out in the rural area, the different little contractors, or is that all post office, these carriers? Are they contracted?
No. The city carriers are civil service.
Oh, I see.
Except instead of being a clerk, well, a clerk carrier. In other words, if I could have stayed, I would have been probably called on at some time to carry one of those routes. They have a little short one. It's City 15. It's the newest one. It's just right in the downtown area because they had to take it off of one of the other carriers. He had too much. So they made this little short city route, and every morning a different guy carries it.
They take turns.
Yeah, it only takes about an hour and a half or 2 hours. But they had even, they called, one morning they had a call on one of the clerks who hardly ever carries, you know.
And those are all the civil service.
That's all civil service. Now, they do have two, what they call, star routes, and those are contract. You bid on those, and then the contract usually runs 4 years, you know, and then you can bid again if you want to keep it, or you can give it up, or they open it for bid depending upon. But usually the carrier can keep it and usually gets an increase. But this is what happened to that. To that carrier down there. I felt so sorry for him. His wife and his granddaughter helped him just about every day. And sometimes they'd come in around 8 o'clock and they'd stay till 4, and all they'd do, all the 5, all they'd do is case mail all day long. But he had bid on this route, and it goes up by Canyon Lake, and it just sort of exploded. He had over, I think, 700 mailboxes.
Oh, my.
And the poor man would come at 6 in the morning and at 6:15 in the evening.
He was still delivering.
We'd be back in the office, but he'd still be casing mail. We'd have to shut him out when we left next morning at 6, here he'd be. So it's hard.
It's not an easy.
No, it's hard labor.
Well, what was the first thing you had to do when you got to the post office in the morning? Here.
At this office?
Yeah. Is that when you start putting the mail in right away? That's your first duty?
Started.
And
break it down in sections.
And that was before you did any paperwork or?
Right. Mail is, that's the first thing. It comes in what they call pouches. Locked. They're locked. Have a lock on them. And that's your letter mail. Then the packages come in big
bags. And how is that brought to the post office here?
It's by contract truck line.
Oh. And that's all they do is deliver mail to the different towns.
Yeah, they just take the sacks.
And this comes from San Antonio
right.
In the morning, then?
Yeah, about 5:15, I think.
And is there somebody here to, or you have a box or something
they
put it in?
No, there's a receptacle in the back. All post offices have a receptacle.
And they just
put it. The star out, or the carrier can get to put the mail in, and nobody needs to be there. They have a lock.
They're
locked out of the main office. But they have a key to one door.
To this one little thing where they just drop the mail, and then they go on, and then when you come in, you start digging in this pouch then.
And it's, you work your letter mail first, and you start that according to sections. You say you the first 150 boxes is section one, then 151 to 300 is section two.
Oh, I see.
And 301 to 450 or 490.
And you kind of divide it up, and you
it
just
up.
Stand in one spot
you,
like a...
Yeah, you have cubby holes in your case, and you throw the letters according to the box number in the section that it's going to go. Now, at New Braunfels, I had to learn the city scheme, and they have a new regulation now. You can't take home to study. You've got to learn it on the job. Well, I learned it in 60 days. I was so proud of myself.
Well, and you know, I noticed here everybody, you know, you were saying on the phone, they'd pick it up and they'd say, give me so-and-so. They wouldn't tell you the number. And isn't that the same way with the box numbers?
Mm-hmm.
They'll just say, give me my mail, and you're supposed to know where their box is, and
they
just kind of expect it.
That's in the little post office. But, see, and then, over here at this post office, I think they have about 10 separations. They have 5 box section separations. They have the route, and then they have four holdouts, you know, like the big people that get a lot of mail, like the bank and the school. But you just hold it out right away, so you just take the whole thing and put it in the box.
Put it in the box then.
But But at New Braunfels, you had about 30 separations because you had those 15 city carriers, and you had to remember which one carried which street.
Oh, my God.
And sometimes the streets are divided into three carriers. One street will be divided three mm-hmm. different carriers, like mm-hmm. City 4 will carry part, City 3 will carry part, and City... let's see, what was it? City 6 would carry part of it, you know, one street. You'd have to remember where the number broke. That's the 700 block or the 500 Jeez. Block. And then you had 15 routes, and you had 2-star routes and 5 rural routes. Now, rural route carriers are civil service also. They're a presidential appointment, too. They used to be.
And when you say presidential, you mean the president of the United States.
Right. But it's
and he appoints all these postmasters? And
he yes.
I did not know that.
He used to. Now,
if he does now, it's something else.
Now it's different. You know, they have this system where you apply for a job, a postmaster's position, and they consider you qualified, mm-hmm. which is what they did with Atkins, you know.
And where do they do all this? At the San Antonio big post office there?
You send the application to the sectional center. And then they tell me postmasters from another sectional center that don't know you go according to your qualifications and choose 3 that they consider the most qualified.
Uh-huh.
I don't really believe that, but that's what they're told.
Yeah.
And then then it can be as many as 5, but usually it's 3, depending upon how many clerks uh-huh. in the post office bid on it, because they're automatically considered if they want to. For the job. And then you go before a review board, and they take a couple of businessmen, a couple of postmaster, that type, and they interview you, and it's really a lot how you impress
that board. Review there mm-hmm. more than anything else.
And they'll listen to all of the candidates for one post office, and then they'll choose one immediately after the interviews are over. And then they may interview for 10 post offices in one day.
One day and do it that way.
But that's the way it's done now.
Well, how about like the clerks? Who hires the clerks?
Well, there again.
Not the postmaster, huh?
The postmaster, yes.
Does have the final say.
Yes, he hires the clerks. But it's civil service grading. And, mm-hmm. of course, your military people have the inside track.
That they have that little extra point.
They have the extra points, and it's called Veterans Preference, and they're on the top of the list, and it's almost impossible for a woman, especially in this area with such a high, so many military retirees
uh-huh.
as we have around here, to get in the post office unless they start in a little office. They've got a good chance in a little office. But there the hours vary. This was what was really hurting me and why I was doing what I did. By going from one post office to the other, it was getting time for me to retire. And your high 3 years is what your retirement is based on, your high salary.
I see.
And I was getting less time, mm-hmm. less and less. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go out and beat the bushes and make these uh-huh. last 3 years count, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that's why I was going place to place like I did.
Well, because that's a smart idea, though.
Right, my retirement was really going to be hurt, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so last year I had a good year, and this year with being on sick leave would be fine, and the one before was pretty good, so I'll come out all right.
Oh, God.
But that's why I did it.
Uh-huh. Well, there's a lot of politics into this kind of a thing all the way around.
Oh, definitely. Because knock at New Braunfels, I think that out of the 40, well, there's about 50 employees total, I guess. Usually about 40 on the floor. There's always some on vacation and sick and so forth. I would say 10 of those were veterans. At least 10.
10 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can they retire from civil service and then pick up something like this on the side then and collect both ways? Retirement
plus?
They call
them double dippers, you know.
And, you know, just take a little clerk type job like from 6:30 till 9 and...
Okay, it's really unfair because they are government pensioned, and then they go and work for the government again.
Uh-huh. But they can do that, and it is legal. Huh?
Right, but we cannot. Now, when I retire from the post office, I can't go work anymore at another government job.
Anywhere?
Nowhere.
Hmm.
But military retirees can.
Can. Oh.
So.
Well, Tammy, yeah, I know postage, I see some letters sometimes at 5 cents, 3 cents, and now here it is 15 cents. When that change goes over to you, did you always hear a lot of complaining about postage going up? And
the last time, I guess, I heard was the least I ever heard. Before
everybody's getting kind of used to it now.
Expected, but when we went to the 13 cents, that I never heard so much moaning and groaning in my life about going to the 13 cents. When I started working in 1950, I think the postcards were 1 cent and the stamps were 2 cents.
God.
And then they went to 3 cents, and then four, and then five, and six, and I don't know if there were seven. I know there were eight, nine, 10, 11, 13.
Uh-huh. Just right on up the line there.
Mm-hmm. Now 15.
And now 15. Yeah, well, I know people usually when things go up like that, the person that has no choice over just doing it as a job, and they're the ones that get the most.
Right, they get the gripe.
Uh-huh.
And the box it. Rent when that goes up. That's enough. That's, I don't think that's fair. Now
I don't either.
That is one thing.
Yeah, I get mail for free over there, and
okay,
people pay for their box.
This is my version of that. I don't know why the person who lives in town
should be penalized
to get his mail. I think, okay.
First of all, he has to drive over to get it. Right. The other guy's getting it right at his door for free.
Okay. Also, he has to pay. He has to come to the office to get it. The person out on the rural route gets it delivered free right to his front door, providing he lives on the highway.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And they say the postal department is in debt, always in debt, can't make it. They'd like to make it pay. If they would charge each rural patron $5 a year, like they charge the people here or whatever, according to the size of their mailbox.
Size of their box, number here.
Just look at the money it would bring in. I mean, everybody.
Well, figure the gasoline and everything that the post office puts out to drive out, you know, real far.
And when I say this, I mean every house, every city.
Anybody that gets mail. Yeah.
They'd be out of debt in one day. Postage could be dropped real quick.
They could make it real easy. Well, Madeline, you should have never retired. You needed to go up there and sell them.
Was
Mr. Naglin a pretty nice guy?
He was an amusing person. Of course, he liked me a whole lot, which helped, you know. He would be quiet, and he would be moody sometimes, and then he'd be real full of fun and tell jokes and stories. Mm-hmm. But the most priceless thing that I remember about him, when he took a package, he would say, what's in here? You know, oh, it's a bowl, or it's a vase, or it's this or that. Is it packed good? Oh, yes. Well, you'll never hear a customer say their package isn't packed well. It's always packed well.
Even if
it's just falling apart, you know, it's packed well. He'd say, well, do you think it can take this? And he'd just let it drop, bang, on the floor. And and the customer would say, don't do that. And he'd say, well, you said it was packed good. You know, if it can't stand that, it's not going to make it to where it's going. He'd say, you know.
Well, that was a sure test.
It was
just down on the
bang, you know.
Well, was the post office open the same hours as it is now then?
It was open 8 to 5, and it was open on Saturdays. We worked 6 days a week. I started out working 4 hours a day, and then I went to six. I think I worked two in the afternoon, four in the morning, two in the afternoon. And then I have worked as much as 90 hours in 2 weeks, but they didn't pay us overtime. As soon as they started paying overtime, they cut that.
They didn't let you do that anymore.
No, and then I was cut back from 84, 86 hours every 2 weeks to, I was only getting like 72, 73, sometimes 69. That's why I said I went out to get better.
Get
these other jobs because of I was going on my three final years, you know.
Well, of the two, which did you like the best?
What?
Telephone operator or?
No, post offices. My favorite.
That was very, you did that the longest, so that probably was your.
It was just, I just enjoyed it. I liked post office work.
Well, you wouldn't have done it for that long if you didn't.
No, I liked it. It's a good paying job, and of course, your bigger offices, if the work is harder and it's dirtier. The more of that stuff you handle, naturally, the dirtier it is. But a small office like this is
really
nice. A nice job. Good job.
You wouldn't have been something else.
No, I can't think of.
What else you would have? Was there anything you ever thought, oh, gee, I wish I would have done this or that?
Tour guide.
Tour guide. Oh, that, me too. That'd be really nice.
I had a taste of that in 76, and it's fascinating. Now, maybe if you have to put up with people all the time and make a living, it might get a little bit
hectic. True.
But
for fun, it would be real good.
I think I'd like to do that. I wish I would. I'd still like to try.
You still have time. You're still pretty young. Get your back taken care of, and you'll have it made. Huh?
Yeah.
Well, Madeline, is there anything else you want to? I think we just about touched on everything. Is there anything we missed now?
Well, I think you asked me about the two-room schoolhouse, didn't you, that we went to?
No, we didn't.
I mean, when we talked about doing this interview.
Yeah, that's right. We never talked about that at all.
Is
we
there still much time left?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Let's go do that.
This is going to be a gabby tape.
I'll piece it together. Keep it all together. I'll put this back in the beginning.
Okay. Well, I told you where I was, why I lived where I did.
Right, and how you got there and everything.
Yeah, right. And I have one sister, and she's 7 years younger than I am. Anyway, we, at that time, most of the communities had a two-room or one-room schoolhouse, usually two. Mm-hmm. And all the children in the local area went to that school and usually had 9 grades. First through the fourth, one teacher had, and the fifth through the ninth, the other teacher had. And school started at 9 o'clock, and then you had a break of 10:15 for 15 minutes, and then 12 you had lunch for an hour, 12 to 1, and then
lunch. Well, they didn't have a cafeteria or anything.
You carried your little lunch bucket. And had your sandwiches and fruit and whatever. You always had to have a fruit at that 10:15 break, and you had to have a piece for the 2:30 break, you know, and save it so you had something to eat.
Something to eat on those breaks. Yeah.
And then
what was the name of this school?
This school I went to was Maverick
School. Maverick School.
And it's still there. In fact, I showed you the pictures
I had taken
of it. And it's located near the Raymond Shuhart and Archie Shuhart residence on the opposite side of 471.
And is that building used for anything now, or is it just an empty building
sitting there? And some of the teachers I remember was Miss. There were two Miss Hills. They were sisters, and one of them was my teacher, first teacher, and I cannot remember her first name. I can remember her sister's name, Thelma, who taught my sister. But I can't remember the other one's name, but they were sisters, and their last name was Hill. Then Melba Vogt,
V-O-G-T.
She married Wilford Habey later. She was Nancy and Wilford Jr.'s mother and Gaynell's mother. She was my teacher for several years. And Beatrice Terrell was one of the teachers. She married Raymond Habey. She's Jacqueline Habey's stepmother.
Oh.
She was a teacher that I remember. And then there was a Miss Patterson when I was up in the 8th or 9th grade. But, okay, the teacher, she didn't have too much time for each class. You know, she had all...
We had, like, all these grades all in one room, and she would spend a little time.
She'd spend, like, 15 minutes reading with... maybe she'd take all the grades for a reading class, you know, and she'd spend 15 minutes maybe with each class. Then she'd have all the arithmetic classes, you know. 15 minutes, and she did more with homework, actually, than with class
time,
you know, and she had to do a lot of paper grading because a lot of it was hand-in work that you did at home. But it was, if you were an interested student and you inquisitive kid, well, you picked up a lot from listening to the older children have their classes.
Because you were in the same room together, and you could listen to it. So you got double, triple, or whatever.
Yeah. And then, of course, it's Christmas, and at the end of the year, you always had to have school plays for the parents. You know, had to show. We had several plays, and then in between when they were changing the stage or setting the scene for the next play, well, some of the kids that played piano were taking piano lessons or something would play some something. Selections in between. And we
put on a nice production then.
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
You don't have any pictures, do you?
You know that I don't. Well, that stuff always took place at night, and
you didn't have flash cubes.
You didn't have flash cameras, right. And you couldn't take any pictures of it. But it would have been fun to look back.
Uh-huh, that really would have been.
So.
Well, in holidays, did you get off at Christmas and Easter and that kind of?
At Easter, we usually got off on a Wednesday afternoon, and we were off Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then Thanksgiving Day, we were off for Thanksgiving and Friday and the Saturday and Sunday. And then Christmas, it would be like the 22nd of December. And then we'd go back maybe on the 2nd or 3rd of January.
And did you start in September and quit in
right after May? Labor Day, the Monday after Labor Day.
And the teachers, you said, rooming, they stayed there, spent the night and everything?
They had. Okay, the house they lived in, they called it a teacherage then.
And teacherage.
That was the name for the house
that the teachers
lived in. Now, not all schools had that. Some of them, they had to board with some of the local people, had rent a room, you know. But our school system did. But the building they lived in was the Old Cliff School. See, they built this new building in 1926, the newer building.
Uh-huh.
And that old building, my father had gone to school in that building.
Oh. Yeah.
And it was located further up across the creek, San Geronimo Creek, right near where the Schuharts live. In fact, it was on their property.
Oh. Yeah.
And so when they built the new building, they moved that old building and converted it into
a newer
house for the teachers. They changed, it was one long barn-like shaped building, and they changed the style of it and added a bathroom
to it.
And that's where the teachers lived. They came came out on a Monday morning and went home on that Friday evening. They usually always were from San Antonio, these girls.
Uh-huh. And would spend then the weekends at their own.
And home. And most of the time they were, they had 2 years of college usually. And they were working towards their degree. See, and they'd go to school.
Just gave them experience.
They'd go to school on Saturday. But they were some of the best teachers, I'm sure, I think, that anybody could have had, because they were just.
They never have to whip anybody or beat them. You know, with that many in a class, you would have thought there'd have been a lot of disturbances with those that weren't working, you know.
Well, they had a few that would always cause an uproar, a few of the boys, you
know. Yeah, well, that's the usual, I guess. Well, what did y'all do at recesses?
Played volleyball or baseball or different games.
Games like that.
And then in those days, they had the count, what they call county meets, according to the class of school. You know, they had them classified according to
how many was in
children, and it would always take place in March, and you'd go and have all these contests, you know, like arithmetic and spelling and number sense, they called it, and picture memory. They'd have flashcards with some of the well-known paintings, and you'd have.
They do that now.
Do they do that
now? Yeah, Laurie was just, picture, and I thought, what in the world?
Picture memory.
Yeah, and they hold it, and you got to know the artist.
Artist and the name of the painting. And I know the number sense, I was in that several times, which was arithmetic. That was just the title
number
of the time, number sense. And they would give you the sheet with problems, and of course we practiced, because you could not put any mark on the sheet of paper except the answer.
Oh my gosh, you couldn't figure on it or anything?
You had nothing to figure. You weren't allowed to figure on a scratch pad or anything.
You should look at it and know the answer.
You looked at it and put the answer down. And they taught us a lot of tricks about adding
and things.
How to do that. Like, if you look at a long column of figures, you can pick out so many combinations of 10, like there'll be a 7 and a 3, there'll be 2 fives, or there'll be a 6 and a 4.
Uh-huh.
So you have 3 of those, you've got 30, and maybe you have one number left, you have 38 or something.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That's how they taught us to add.
So no calculators.
No. And for a little school, it was because we had good teachers.
Uh-huh.
We'd go to those contests and just do
come out
with 25 or 30 kids, you know. Sometimes we didn't even have enough to make a baseball team. They'd let us play with 8 players or something because we couldn't produce the
enough
player, you know.
Well, how about what totals kids were there, would you think?
The most I can ever recall was 35.
At one time?
One time. From 22.